NPR's business news begins with Hewlett-Packard layoffs. In a securities filing, the maker of computers and printers confirmed that it will cut 5,000 more jobs this year than it originally estimated. That would bring to 34,000 the number of jobs the company is planning to cut worldwide by October. The cuts are part of a restructuring plan formed in 2012 aimed at stemming losses caused by declining sales. Hewlett-Packard is based in the U.S., but it has about 300,000 employees internationally. And before the ball dropped in Times Square last night, new numbers came out on the housing market, and they showed the past year had the biggest gains in home prices since 2006. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
The housing recovery kicked into high gear last year, and that's in large part because at the start of the year, back last winter, it was just a great time to buy a house. Interest rates were at record lows, home prices hadn't risen that much yet in many areas. Lots of respected economists were saying now is the time to buy, and we saw a strong revival in demand from home buyers.
The results are housing prices continue to go up 13.6% over the last 12 months.
David Blitzer is an economist with S&P, which publishes the closely watched Case-Shiller Home Price Index. He thinks, though, that such big price gains are not going to be sustainable in the coming year. He points out interest rates rose in the second half of last year, which makes monthly mortgage payments more expensive for the same-priced house for home buyers. That's cooled things off a bit. Home sales have slowed and prices aren't rising quite as quickly.
By this time next year, I think we'll be looking at home prices that are still going up, but more likely single digits, 5, 6, 7% annual increase, not 13.5%.
Still, if the labor market keeps improving and more Americans get back to work, Blitzer thinks that should help sustain a healthy housing market. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
And to save on costs and compete for a younger generation of customers, banks are finding new uses for the old ATM. They're making them gateways to actual human bank tellers over a phone connection. You know, say your wallet is stolen, but you still need to get money from an ATM, or you want very exact change. New ATMs will let you talk to tellers at call centers who can handle your specific requests. Ben Bradford from member station WFAE reports.
There's a drive-through ATM here in Charlotte, North Carolina that looks pretty standard, but it's got an extra function. I push a button that says, speak with teller.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Welcome to Bank of America. My name is Carolina. How are you today?
The face of a woman wearing a headset sitting in front of a plain blue background flashes onto the ATM screen. She's one of a cadre of Bank of America employees in Florida and Delaware call centers, where they remotely control ATMs across the country. I ask for $26.
Just a 1, a 5, and 20.
Okay, you want 1, 5, you want 1, 20, and I'm going to give you 1, 1.
All the details of my transaction pop up on the screen. I press confirm. The machine spits out my new bills. I thank Carolina and drive off. Bank of America started rolling out these virtual tellers in Charlotte, New York, Boston, and a few other cities earlier this year and plans to expand further. Meanwhile, PNC Bank and Chase have been introducing their own ATMs of the future, which dispense singles and fives. Cities got ones that let customers open accounts and pay bills. Analyst Nancy Bush says banks ultimately see the ATMs as money savers.
There is a very large need for banks to continue to control their costs. And of course, branches, branch personnel, et cetera, are one of the bank's largest costs.
The more services the ATMs can do, the less banks have to spend on tellers and branches, which are expensive, but seeing less traffic than they have in decades as mobile and online banking have taken off. The firm SNL Financial reports about 3% of U.S. bank branches have closed in just the past 4 years. Instead of spending on real estate and staffing, banks can install street corner ATMs and pay fewer employees to video chat, or none at all. But that leaves one problem, Bush says.
They want you to be able to access services through technology, but they still see the branch as their biggest revenue generator.
Banks want to get you into the branch so they can sell you more products. Bank of America calls it the stair step. CEO Brian Moynihan explained it to investors this month at a conference.
We're working from a checking account to a core checking account to a credit card and to auto loan and ultimately to a mortgage loan and then to investment. Now, this happens literally thousands of times a day.
So banks are launching the hybrid branch, like this Chase branch next to Grand Central in Manhattan. There's a lot of open space and no tellers. Instead, customers use Chase's ATMs of the future in kiosks along the walls. In the center of the room, there's an equivalent to Apple's Genius Bar for the things the ATMs can't do, branch manager Jennifer DeLuca says.
New debit card, change of address, change of PIN, anything that we can do kind of quick transactions. It's Midtown Manhattan. Instead of taking you over to a desk and kind of going through all of it, we can get you in and out as fast as you'd like.
But upstairs, there's still a traditional bank with loan officers and financial advisors at desks. And while this branch is huge, removing tellers means Chase can move into spaces as small as a coffee shop. Bank of America and Wells Fargo opened their own similar hybrid branches earlier this year in New York and Washington, D.C. Some employees see the new ATMs and branches as a threat, another wave of machines replacing humans. Bank of America tellers recently picketed the new machines in Manhattan. Banking executives respond that the traditional branch isn't going away completely. The new technology is just a complement. And that's because, they say, many people still prefer to bank with a real person instead of a video screen. For NPR News, I'm Ben Bradford.
And today's last word in business is cure. Because what happens in Vegas should stay there, like your hangover. If you celebrated New Year's Eve there, big time. A Las Vegas company called Hangover Heaven is offering much-needed relief to midnight revelers with house calls and a walk-in clinic. The cure? An IV offering 1.5 liters of hydration plus a concoction of vitamins, antioxidants, and headache medicine. $99 gets you the basic package called the Redemption. But if salvation is what you need this morning, they also sell a more elaborate package for $199 called the Rapture. And that's the Business News on Morning Edition from NPR News. Hoping you're having a pleasant New Year's morning. I'm Renee Montaigne.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. From the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries. On the web at lemelson.org. From the Kresge Foundation, expanding opportunities in America's cities at kresge.org. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
Tonight at 7 on WILL-FM. It's the evening concert. We'll have the Gala First Day Concert from Boston with Martin Perlman leading Boston Baroque and the music of Bach, in particular the Brandenburg Concertos numbers 3 and 4 and the Coffee Cantata. That's the Gala First Day Concert from Boston with Martin Perlman and Boston Baroque tonight at 7 on the evening concert on WILL-FM 90.9.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana.
Coming up after the news here on the BBC World Service, it's Hard Talk with me, Stephen Sacker. Draw up a list of the biggest bands in the history of rock and roll, and a remarkable number would be British. The Beatles and the Rolling Stones, of course, but also on the list would be Pink Floyd, whose albums, Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall, became classics. My guest today, Roger Waters, was Pink Floyd's bass player and driving force until he quit the band in 1985. He is still one of rock's most controversial figures. Why?
If you look at what we did together, uncomfortable as it was to be in that relationship where we were no longer four guys in a garage, but basically we were a real group, four guys driven by the ambition of making it. With Dark Side of the Moon, we made it.
That's Roger Waters on Hard Talk after the news.